Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. As always, we start out with Wis I Was There. Some northern Wisconsin residents on Medicaid drive 500 miles for dental care. The fight over the Teacher Protection Act took center stage this week in the Capitol, including a Milwaukee TV reporter who said there were 172 incidents of violence in MPS per day. And finally, what can the state do as long as wolves are protected federally? That debate, Wis I Was There.
I mean, we see patients in our 10 dental centers up in north central northwestern Wisconsin from every county in the state every year. And patients make 500-mile round trips to come to see us.
This bill shows that we will not stand for anti-Semitic policies. And it requires companies that do business with the state to verify they are not participating in any boycotts of Israel as a condition of their contracts.
You don't think that local governments are capable of making this decision, that you have to make it for them here in Madison?
Well, are you suggesting that it's okay then, Senator Wirtz, for local governments to discriminate against Jews?
I'm suggesting that there are good, capable people that get elected to local positions, and they can make up their own minds. They don't need big government in Madison to tell them what to do. That's what I'm suggesting.
I'm glad to be able to speak to you today on the proposed Teacher Protection Act. The mental health field learned long ago that criminalizing behavior or restraining humans is the most traumatizing response we can have. It also resulted in injuries and deaths for patients. Having a bill that sends these students into a criminal track instead of treatment or following their IEPs is harmful and will impact their ability to get an education despite their disabilities.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a major problem in Milwaukee. In the 2015-2016 school year, there were 31,000 plus referrals for violent behavior, an average of more than 172 per day, yet only 9,000 students were suspended. There is no evidence that the Milwaukee Public School District, at least, has control over violence in its classrooms or has any interest in protecting teachers and other students from violent students in their classrooms.
I think what we're grappling with is, you know, what are the right responses here? Obviously, I don't want a student who's violent to hurt anybody at a school. Absolutely not. Most students aren't violent. But a lot of students do have these mental health issues. I hear about this at the schools that I visit. My worry and my concern is this very punitive approach, it's not going to work in many, many circumstances, because you might have a child with a disability who can't control themselves, and there's no provision in here for that child. There's no exception for that child.
We are here today because each of us recognizes that the digital divide is holding rural America back. At CAN, we have an actionable plan to close the divide in the next 5 years. Our plan will rapidly accelerate the deployment and reduce the cost of high-speed internet service to the approximately 23.4 million rural Americans who live each day without a broadband connection.
In 2017, the state paid out $196,397.34 to farms, individuals, and hunters for damage done to them by wolves. In 2002, when the gray wolf population was close to the set management goal, the state had only paid $54,497.10 for damage done by wolves. If the management goal were to be in place, Wisconsin would save money, livestock, and pets. Assembly Bill 712 will be that driving force for effecting positive change in our state.
And if the intent is to delist the gray wolf, there's a legislative solution to that we can all agree to, and it's at the federal level. In the last two sessions, that bill has died on the Speaker of the House's desk. What really troubles me with a bill like this is that I think that it sets sportsmen up, and we all know that sportsmen are a minority in this country. It sets sportsmen up to be shown in a bad light, and I think that's not something we ever want to do.
Yeah, we have to talk. We have to open the show with the showdown in the Senate mm-hmm. over the confirmation of Mike Haas, Administrator of the State Elections Commission, and Brian Bell, Administrator of the State Ethics Commission. Now, Senator Fitzgerald, on the Senate session on the 23rd, plans to offer confirmation votes and says, quote, they will never be confirmed. Do I have this right?
Yeah, that's what he's been saying. So we have a unique situation where you have the chair of the Elections Commission saying, that's fine if you vote them down, we're going to keep them. It doesn't matter, which I'm not sure if that's
actually right. That's Mr. Thompson, who calls Fitzgerald a coward.
And a bully. Different. So what we're watching is, okay, so the Senate's going to go forward on the 23rd and vote on these nominations. What will the commissions then do? I mean, I've heard all kinds of options thrown out. Could the commissions, for example, say, well, okay, well, it doesn't matter. You sue us to prove your point. Then we have a legal battle over whether Mike Haas stays as election commission administrator. Do they say, okay, that's fine that you vote them down. We're going to appoint them interim commissioners or administrators. Keep around that way. During the Ethics Commission meeting this week, there was talk about having a public hearing, have the commission itself hold a public hearing on Brian Bell to tout his credentials. They said no, but funny enough, during the hearing or the meeting, they kind of had a public hearing anyway where they touted about his military background, yeah. gave him a chance to talk about how he wasn't really involved with the Doe records the way DOJ says he was, that they were trying to clean this stuff up. It is a mess. And I don't know what the resolution is going to be. And then, oh, by the way, we have an election in 10 months that we need somebody to run. And who's going to run it if they get rid of Mike Haas? Then who's going to run that election?
Well, you mentioned the Doe records. And let's listen to just a little segment of yesterday's Ethics Commission. The chairman of the Ethics Commission asked Brian Bell about the storage of records in the basement of the old GAB. So let's go to that video clip right now, please.
Let me ask, did you ever have a reason to look for the materials before DOJ contacted you?
No, my understanding was that materials were appropriately secured, and when they contacted us, we put forward a very concerted effort to locate all relevant records and provide them, and then we went beyond what they had requested and continued to search in unlikely places, and as we continued to find information, we immediately notified DOJ and provided that without their request.
Weren't those materials supposed to be removed pursuant to the Supreme Court order before DOJ ever showed up?
That's my understanding.
If you could just briefly describe these two basement storage areas as visually as you can.
I would describe the smaller room as being in a safety hazard. We did not allow staff to go into that room on their own without someone else, one, knowing that they were there because the records were in such disastrous shape that there was danger of collapse and burying someone in that room. The larger room, I would say, was in slightly better organizational state. At least the records, most of the records, the terminated campaign finance reports and statements of economic interest that were on hold for destruction were in that room that we quickly inventoried. But most of that, I believe, belonged to the what is now the Elections Commission.
Now, J.R., Senator Fitzgerald has said both Mr. Haas and Mr. Bell will, quote, never, close quote, be confirmed. Mm-hmm. His problem with Mr. Haas is Mr. Haas was part of the GAB investigation, John Doe 1, John Doe 2, and what the Attorney General calls John Doe 3, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Now, what's Mr. Fitzgerald's problem with Mr. Bell?
Basically, that he's kind of part of the whole mix, right? Because they're pointing at this DOJ report about the records, and part of that report says that Brian Bell and David Berger, the attorney for the Ethics Commission, basically lawyered up, according to DOJ, and weren't cooperative. The commission says, no, they didn't. We actually wanted legal representation for Brian Bell because Berger would normally do it. He wasn't allowed to be in that interview because they had to be separately. It is interesting to watch where I'm not quite clear why Brian Bell is the focus of some of this, because Brian Bell, during this hearing Thursday, said that he left the GEB in 2014 because he had issues with the agency, how it was being run. He, while working there, did not deal with the John Doe, was dealing with data. He went to Department of Safety and Professional Services, get a better job opportunity, and came back. So he was making the case that they at the Ethics Commission went to clean up these records, that there was this problem with record keeping, and they weren't aware what they had and went about trying to clean it up. And that's the image that he tried to portray. But he seems to be less of a player than the others that have such Republican ire at this point.
Another mystery here is it is Mr. Fitzgerald and Assembly Voss and their chambers who created both the Elections Commission and the Ethics Commission, six members, three R's, three D's on each, and both of them have now unanimously backed Mr. Haas and Mr. Bell?
There's obviously a disconnect between the commissioners and the people who have appointed them to those offices about these administrators. Why that is, I don't know. What happens next is going to be interesting. I've never seen it before, and I'm not sure if I'll see it again.
And you're referring to the potential January 23 votes.
And what happens on January 24th? If these guys are both rejected, then what? What happens?
Well, there's a school of thought that says they no longer had their respective agencies, the commissions.
Thompson said it doesn't matter. So if they vote him down the 23rd, does Mike Haas walk in the door the 24th and Mark Thompson says no big deal, he's still the administrator? Do they appoint them as interim administrators? Like, mm-hmm. What do they do? I don't know. And who would want the job? That's the other thing is, if this is what's going on, Republicans have been unhappy with the GAB, or have been unhappy with the GAB for years. If they're unhappy with this setup, who's going to take that job to head these commissions? Who would be trusted by both sides? Remember, if you found somebody who made Republicans happy, you have to get a bipartisan vote to confirm somebody. So who would you find? Maybe with the Elections Commission, a former clerk, or a county clerk who's long into his or her career and ready to retire, said, I'll do 2 years with this commission as, you know, on my way out the door. I don't know who you find. Who trusts that job?
Two other issues before we get done with this topic. First of all, the Ethics Commission now hires former U.S. attorney, former corrections chief, former circuit court judge Patrick Fiedler as a, quote, investigator. I'm sorry, I don't know. Who is he investigating?
Well, I got wind from the Fitzgerald and Noss offices that they've been contacted by Fiedler, and the commission can't tell you anything about an investigation. But you can put two and two together, because at December 22nd meeting, Brian Bell asked the commission to do an investigation of him. He said, I want you to basically clear my name because there are all these allegations of impropriety being thrown at me by Republicans. I want an investigation to clear my name. So that happened December 22nd. Contact, I believe, was made on Monday. So you kind of put two and two together. Okay, this must be what's going on. Now, Fiedler can't talk to me. Noss and Fitzgerald can only say, they contacted us, is what they're looking for.
But we had a letter yesterday from Senator Steve Noss saying, I understand you've contacted me. Here is why I do not support either Mr. Haas or Mr. Bell.
And he's calling this investigation an intimidation tactic.
Yes.
Trying to send it back down on this confirmation vote January 23rd, which adds more intrigue to it all.
You and I, as taxpayers, we're paying the cost of the special investigator.
And they can't tell me how much rates would be, that stuff. I can't get a hold of that information yet. But yeah, that's all going on right now.
Okay, the final thing I want to talk about this topic. Yesterday, we had an Ethics Commission report saying this. Let me get the numbers right. 78 of 539 lobbyists did not register as quickly as required in 2017 last year. 74 of 691 organizations or companies or groups that employ lobbyists engaged in unauthorized lobbying. Big deal?
I don't know, because I don't know the intent behind the people didn't properly report this stuff. Because if during the course of the meeting, they didn't talk about the intent. They found this through an audit of filing reports. And you have like these benchmarks you have to hit before you're actually a lobbyist under the state law. For example, you can lobby for 4 days before you register. So was there a lag between some reporting requirements? Was there actually an effort to evade the lobbying laws? I don't know that, because we have not seen who was accused of these things, why they were picked out of the lineup, and then three, what their explanation is. The commission went into closed session. They talked with staff about creating kind of a new fee structure that if you commit a penalty or break this rule, you get fined this much versus this much. But we don't know the intent and the story of each one. So I can't tell you if it's a big deal or not. But as somebody kind of pointed out to me, if you're really trying to evade the law, you probably need to pick up an audit like this that looks at the reporting that you did to the Ethics Commission about your lobbying. You just wouldn't report anything. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Do we need to display a little bit of our trademark journalistic skepticism and ask whether this audit is the Ethics Commission trying to tell the legislature, see, we are the cop on the beat?
You know, it's interesting. They have touted it as the first time they've done anything like this before to this extent. So for them, you know, it's something different. But again, is it just a reporting problem where I've talked to lobbyists who will tell you that they go through and, you know, figure out their times. You go, whoops, I forgot this one. And my principal has already reported that I was. So is that the problem?
Okay. Okay, new topic. Mm-hmm. The governor last week announced that he now supports a plan that he vetoed to help those districts that are locked in by revenue limits. Mm-hmm. There, the DPI says there's about 120 of them. Now, Senator Darling and Representative Nygren loaded this into the budget, and he vetoed it. Okay. But why does he like it this time around?
Well, John Nygren worked on this, and he put two things in there. One is a low revenue spending plan. Second one is a sparsity aid boost. When you look back at the budget Governor Walker did, he included a plan to boost sparsity, which these are rural districts that have like fewer than 745 students, I think. Walker wanted to use that to address rural schools. Republicans, especially Assembly Republicans, said, no, we want this low revenue plan. These low revenue districts are locked into about $9,100 per student right now.
Yes.
That's the mix of property taxes and state revenue that you can spend on a kid. The state average is more than $10,000 right now. So for these lawmakers, they said, look, we have to have these guys catch up a little bit. We went to two-thirds funding. It's been 30 years now.
Go ahead.
25-ish years.
23, 24.
Started to lock in, and they haven't let it catch up. Walker didn't like that proposal because it opened the door to raising property taxes without voters having a say in it, especially in districts where they had rejected a revenue exceeding the operating revenue limit. So what Niagara included was a three-year look back. If you rejected, or your voters rejected a increase in levy in
you
the past 3 years.
You can't take it from 9,100 to 9,200 to 9,300, and the cap on that is 9,800.
And that is Walker's kind of like one of his concerns. Now, another piece of this that's really kind of wonky is when Republicans put their plan in for low revenue schools in the budget, they added money to try and offset the impact on the overall property tax bill for Wisconsin. That money wasn't vetoed out when Walker vetoed the plan. So even though they would do that, if they do this, it shouldn't impact that property tax number, which is key for Walker because he's running on a platform of your property tax bill will be lower in 2018 than it was before I took office. So that's left alone. It's all good to go. Now, the question left is, one, we'll see revenue numbers maybe next week from Fiscal Bureau about how things look. We're a little more than 6 months into the 24-month budget. It's kind of a gauge. Two, the Senate hasn't committed to this yet. They have to kind of let their members look at it and kind of savor it for a little bit before they decide to go forward. No, by the way, we're about 2 months away from being done for the year. So there's a little bit of a window to get this done.
Okay, but to get this done in the next school year, they've got to come in and formally approve it. Mm-hmm. And you've heard a price tag. I've heard a price tag, $22 million. Does that sound right? Have you heard more or less?
Between the two of them? I'm not sure what the exact number is, but that sounds about right. The thing with the Senate is, because of their caucus is set up, you can't commit to anything. So Alberta Darling, when I talked to her, said, I want to see numbers and talk to my caucus. Mm-hmm. That has kind of become code for her members don't want you to get out ahead of them before they have a chance to weigh in and say, well, I want to see this or that or whatnot.
Yeah.
So I think they want to do it, but it's a matter of making sure the Senate's on board before they go forward with it. Get this thing done.
And the Democrats, of course, said, hey, Governor Walker, you're stealing all of our ideas. More K-12 aids at $649 million over 2 years. And now you want to close Lincoln Hills. And now you want to embrace what you vetoed to help the lower spending districts. So is that an effective campaign theme?
We'll see. But for Walker, it's another arrow in the quiver about education, right? And that's become, I mean, his first digital ad this week of the year was about education. he is really playing that up big time heading into the re-election.
Okay. Let's turn quickly. Madison Mayor Paul Sagan, he's 72 years old. I remember him from a student activist on this campus in the 60s, then council member, then let me get the years right. Mayor 73 to 79, 89 to 97, 2011 to the present. He becomes the, I don't know, who's counting, 18th, 19th Democratic?
There were 19 Democrats registered when I counted Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Of those, maybe 9 will run actual campaigns.
Viable campaigns.
The problem for all of them is, how do you break through in such a wide field, and also, where do you draw your votes? Paul Soglin, you could say, okay, he's a Dane County candidate, right? Well, you've got Tony Evers, Kelda Royce, and Mela Mitchell from Dane County. Okay, Soglin wants to be the Bernie candidate. You have Mike McCabe and Kathleen Vinehout trying to get that crowd too. So where is he going to fit into this whole mix? How are they going to break through? Who's going to raise money? None of the candidates have raised their finance reports yet as of this hour. They're due on Tuesday. I guess an idea of viability for all these guys.
We'll be talking about them a week from today.
So we'll see that, but Soglin has to figure out a way, how is he going to break through? Now, as somebody said to me this week, he's kind of a character, so you can use that to get earned media, right? Get out there in the newspapers and on TV with your line, like you call him the governor, pothole governor or something like that. That might help a little bit. But where does he raise his money?
Yeah.
Where does he fit in? And how does he break through?
So well, he said that Scott Walker rewards cronyism rather than hard work. We need to create and act and support policies that are designed to improve the lives of every single Wisconsinite. And I want to come back to one of the governor's tweets. Look how far Democrats have drifted to the left when one of their leading candidates for governor is a mayor who gave brutal communist dictator Fidel Castro the keys to the city. I think that was in 1975.
Yes, I was 2 years old. Also, by the way, Walker's been knocking Madison because he says that the crime rate, murder rate is up under Soglin and businesses are leaving. But then Walker starts an ad campaign this week from WEDIC, his job creation agency.
We'll get there next.
That talks about Madison as a selling point to come here for millennials.
Yes.
So it's an odd dance we're going to be doing about knocking Madison in one breath, but then praising it in another.
Okay, two more points. Former Democratic State Representative Mandela Barnes of Milwaukee announces that he's going to run for lieutenant governor. Who else is considering running as
Kurt Kober is a businessman from Sheboygan. He lived at other places for some years. He moved back. Those are two that the most attention. Mandela has the advantage of he's got a record in Wisconsin. He's second vice chair of the state party, state lawmaker. He's from Milwaukee, so he'll have that. But Kurt Kober has personal resources. That might help him kind of spread the message. Whereas Mandela, I mean, if you've got 19 people running for governor and they can't break through, they have a hard time raising money, why would you be able to raise money easily for lieutenant governor, right?
Okay.
So, but what will unions do? Working Party, Working Families Party, these other groups, in a low turnout primary, and almost all primaries in August are low turnout, right? Those kinds of groups can give you an advantage. So if you win their support, make fun members, hey, go turn out on this Tuesday. That could help you. Greatly.
Okay, let's take about 20 seconds. The first poll that was touted by the Tony Evers campaign.
Paid for by his campaign.
Paid for by his campaign. Okay, that's critically important, which is why we're spending like nanoseconds on it. Showed him at 29, Vinehout at 11, and Soglin at 10?
I believe so. 28% undecided. To me, that when I'm talking to people, that tells us where they're starting as much as anything else with name ID. Evers alone run statewide before, others haven't, or won statewide before, I should say. Others have not won statewide. It's not necessarily going to end up, but it tells you a little flavor of where this race is. And oh, by the way, you know, like Kathleen Vinehouse at 11%, whereas she won three or four
in the primary for the recall election in 2012.
It also tells you, like, Walks and Gronick, who are kind of top tier because they have money, they have a long way to go. We also have a long way to this race. This is before the paid media starts in that campaign, so don't think this is like the absolute locked-in numbers, or more like where they're starting.
Right. Okay. Final topic. Let's talk about the $6.8 million that WEDIC is spending to try to attract millennials. The campaign on commuter trains in Chicago and social media says things like, in Milwaukee, rent is 42% less expensive than Chicago. So your bedroom, kitchen, and living room can be all on separate rooms. This is 6.8. The effort for Chicago area millennials is costing $1 million. I just think this is kind of fun. Any observations on that?
No, just touting Madison while also knocking it. But we have an issue in Wisconsin of we have jobs that are not being filled. So we have Foxconn coming online. I don't know how many jobs it'll create in the end, but there could be, was it 13,000 possibly, not including like a ripple effect, if it maxes out. Again, a big X.
Yeah.
If. But if all the jobs are coming and all these like suppliers are coming and we can't fill the jobs we have, where do you find people? We've got to bring them back somehow. So I'm not sure this going to work, but it's part of the tax.
And the press release from the Economic Development Corporation said we're also targeting, let me get this right, calling it a national talent attraction campaign, targeting veterans and those on active duty about to be discharged. Okay, stock report. What's politics stock report?
So Tammy Baldwin is in a fundraising league all by herself in the Senate race. She sold it again. We got numbers this morning. I think it was like 2.8-ish million raised in the fourth quarter of 2017. She is raised, by my account, roughly $10 million in 2017 altogether. Her campaign says that both are records for a quarter and a full year and an off year for a federal candidate from Wisconsin. Leah Vukmir raised like $400,000 in the fourth quarter. Kevin Nicholson, $800,000, which their campaigns touted. But this shows that she is in a world on her own. Now,
go ahead. How much are each of these three sitting on January 1?
They talked about $500,000, the two Republicans, and Baldwin's at $7
million. $7
million. Now, you can't really compare in some ways those two to Baldwin because they are just getting off the ground where she's got a national network. She's
That's
in
fair.
Office.
That's true.
But look at 2015. She's ahead of both where Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold were at this point. Also interesting to note, there was a poll that was done for WMC by the Terrence Group that found her at a 46-42 job favorability rating. Not great numbers, but better than Ron Johnson was at the same point ahead of his reelection bid. There's a Huffington Post story that people have been talking about a lot where how Wisconsin's quietly becoming the top Senate race. It plays up the amount of spending that's been done in Wisconsin so far, and it's more than elsewhere. What it doesn't really describe correctly in my mind is that most of this money is being spent to boost up Kevin Nicholson, not really against Baldwin. Both sides are using that story to kind of puff up this race. Republicans say, look, she's really vulnerable. Baldwin goes, look, I've got a real race in my hands. You should give me more money. They're both using it to play things up. But bottom line is, financially, she's got a lot of money. She's not going to slow down when I talk to people. The question becomes, come August, once that primary is done, how much does she have? How much outside groups spent? What's the environment like? But she's right now in a decent position.
Mixed.
Ed Flynn.
Milwaukee police chief.
10 years as chief. He says he's going to step down now
and
retire. Couple of things I've heard. One, I mean, look, when you're police chief, you're always going to have detractors and people like you, right? That's just a fact of life. After 10 years fighting with the common council, it's got to get old. He also is up for review, I believe, of the Police and Fire Commission. Why go out with a negative report if they're going to rip you? Why not just go on your own terms and say, I'm done with this place. I've had enough.
Okay. And falling?
So Donald Trump, that same Terrence poll, 38% of Wisconsin, likely Wisconsin voters in 18, approve the job he's doing, while 57% disapprove.
Wow.
Look, he won Wisconsin at, what, 47%, give or take a few, you know, percentage points or fractions. He's never going to be a 55% guy here. But we're talking about 38%, you know, 10 months out from a key election to see what might be a Democratic wave coming and where is he at. Now, you know, Republicans talk about the intensity of his base is still there, but swing voters are not. And we're going to see a little bit of a gauge on Tuesday with the 10th Senate District of where is there a wave coming. Okay. Now, it's not a perfect test because it is a one Senate district in western Wisconsin. Republicans had a huge head start in raising money and spending money up there. So if the Democrats lose, I'm not saying that's going to like means there's no wave coming. But we could be seeing something happening. There are lots of people who are nervous in Wisconsin about Republicans about what his numbers might do unless people see him as a party of one. If he's a party of one, he's not a Republican, that might help Republicans a little
bit. But your morning newsletter said that an Eric Holder group is running ads for the Democrat in the 10th
I've
Senate
asked the,
District?
I've asked the group for the ad. I haven't got it yet, but they have to file with the Ethics Commission if you're going to do an independent expenditure. Those are the ones that say vote for, vote against. $10,000. Holder's group is dedicated toward changing. It's an anti-gerrymandering group. They want to change the dynamic in legislatures to try and flip how maps are drawn because of the Republican tilt. They've said that if we don't get some gains, you know, we as Democrats, we could be in a lot of trouble in 2021. New maps are drawn.
So that race is becoming nationalized. Our 10th special, 10th Senate District.
Yep.
On Tuesday to fill the seat of Sheila Harsdorf, now the State Ag Secretary. A programming note. Wisconsin and I are scheduled to interview the Elections Commission Administrator Michael Haas on Wednesday and the Ethics Commission Administrator Brian Bell and the chairman of that panel on Thursday. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 12th.
Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.